Good morning, everyone. First of all, I'd like to thank Pastor Ronell for the invitation to worship with you and for sharing the pulpit with me this morning and for that wonderful introduction. I found myself wondering, who is this Joseph Jung that she speaks of? I want to meet this guy. She was far too kind. I bring you warm greetings from the United Methodist Church at New Brunswick, which is where I serve as the associate pastor with Pastor Cindy. And I bring a big thanks from the Rutgers Campus Ministry, which is where I serve as the director of campus ministry on behalf of the United Methodist Church. Many of you may not know this, but Christ UMC has been a strong supporter in the relaunch of a Methodist presence at Rutgers. We're entering our second year back on campus, and our main activity has been a food ministry. Each week, we gather on Monday nights for mostly home-cooked meals, and Pastor Ronell has been gracious enough to support these meals by providing us with gift cards to use at ShopRite. On a given week, 4 to 6 students come together and slow down over a meal. Fortunately for these students, it's my wife, Sam, who's doing the cooking. Out of the 8 active members of our group this year, only 2 were raised United Methodist. But what's so interesting is that I hear in our conversations one of the hallmark features of a Methodist band meeting. I hear us asking the question, how is it with your soul? Or in modern parlance, what's really going on? I can report to you that I've witnessed at our dinner table a transformation. That dinner becomes a sacred space with a courageous testimony from the students who are gathered, acting as fuel for the Holy Spirit to move in our midst. It was Griffin, a new student this year, who pointed this out at our first dinner. As we were wrapping up, he pointed out how none of us had taken out our phones for the duration of the 2 hours we had spent together. Here we were, 6 guys, gathered without a TV screen in sight, paying no attention to the 2 Monday night football games that were on that night. None of us checking our phones to see how our fantasy football teams were doing. If that doesn't count as a miracle, I don't know what does. Because we were fully present with each other. Fed by the sharing of our lives as much as we were by the food on the table. It felt like Holy Communion. The authentic stories of our lives being blessed, broken, and given for each other. In addition to our weekly small group meals, the Rutgers Campus Ministry has hosted a broader community meal every other Friday called the Welcome Table. Through these dinners, we have sought to create a space where all of our neighbors feel a sense of belonging, especially those who are experiencing homelessness. Once again, Christ UMC has been a strong supporter, with Sherry and the members of Shepherd Shelves stepping up to provide us with a delicious meal on more than one occasion. Since launching the Welcome Table in March, not only have we connected with vulnerable members of our community who often are going unnoticed, we have also formed relationships with students from 3 different Rutgers campus ministries. By God's grace, they have heard about the Welcome Table and have come to support our outreach ministry. We're now averaging around 50 guests at each Welcome Table dinner, and we've explored ways to go beyond providing food and fellowship for our guests. For instance, we have a social worker who does intakes for new members of the community. And recently, two students have started a haircutting ministry that has transformed the breezeway from the sanctuary to the fellowship hall into a pop-up barbershop. Together, we're asking the question of what it looks like for the gifts and talents of the Rutgers community to intersect with the needs of the broader New Brunswick community. Questions like, what if Rutgers nursing students came by to do basic health screenings? Or what if Masters of Social Work students came to put theory into practice? Or if Mason Gross students came and led a paint night? Or what if United Methodist Church confirmation classes in the surrounding areas made hygiene kits or winter care packages and came to deliver them and stayed for dinner? Because something tells me that the Rutgers campus ministry has to be a collaborative effort. Like any ministry we're called to undertake, we aren't supposed to do it alone. And seeking to collaborate with other stakeholders at Rutgers has been a slow process. But again, it's been Christ UMC who has been there to help foster relationships with the Rutgers community. As soon as I came to Rutgers, I discovered that I was already on the Interfaith Council, thanks to somebody you might know, a certain Pastor Francie. She had served as the Methodist representative on the council after Ellen Little, my predecessor at Rutgers, had passed away 5 years ago. And it was Christ UMC who supported the first collaborative effort we had with Rutgers, which was at the New Brunswick Farmers Market last year during Rutgers Family and Parents Weekend. Thank you, Mr. Cunningham, for staying for the duration of the event. Actually, they reached out again to see if we wanted to host something this year during Halloween, so if anyone is interested, please come see me after the service. So thank you. Because we could not have gotten the campus ministry off the ground without your support. Thank you for praying over the seashells last year. Thank you for the gift cards that have made our weekly dinners possible. Thank you for coming out to support our community outreach efforts. Thank you. You would think that after receiving all the support from you and from the local churches in the area, and after seeing such amazing fruits that God has produced in our campus ministry, that I would have this abiding peace about me. That surely, having experienced God miraculously make a way for me and Sam to come to New Jersey, a place where we knew absolutely no one, and had never in our wildest dreams imagined moving to a place like New Jersey. And having experienced God's steadfast love and provision since getting here, that surely I would have a peace like a river guiding my footsteps and a blessed assurance allowing me to sing, "It is well with my soul." Or so you would think. Unfortunately, this has not been the case, because too often I forget. I forget about God's faithfulness and the mighty deeds which have sustained me and carried me along the way. And because I forget, I get scared. I get scared thinking that I'm the one in charge, that I'm doing it by my own strength, that I'm doing it alone. And when I get into the state of spiritual amnesia, I forget about the one who has called me by name. I forget about the one who has made a new covenant with me through Jesus Christ. I forget about the one who calls me his own, the one who's brought me safe thus far. I know it's supposed to be ghost stories that we're supposed to share. Forgive me if this is a stretch, but I'm reminded of an incident that is scary to me upon recollection. because it was in a time when my fearful and forgetful faith got the best of me. It was right around this time last year. And I gotta say, I was feeling good, really good about myself. You see, at the last weekly dinner I had held, 10 students had come out. To go from 0 to 10, it was amazing. I said, this is it. 10 would turn to 20, 20 into 40. We'd be at 80 in no time. Well, the next week, 10 didn't turn into 20, like I had hoped. It was 7:30, and no one was there yet. Play it cool. It's okay. They're college students. They're always running late. But slowly, text messages started to trickle in. Sorry, I'm too swamped with work. I've got an exam that I need to study for this week. That's when I started to panic. Like Tegu, our dog, after he's gotten a bath, I got the zoomies. But not in that cute, adorable way. I was going around in circles, taking a step towards each person that approached, desperately hoping that it was one of my students. And when it became clear that no one was coming, I wanted to disappear. It felt like the world was crumbling around me, and I had one response, and that was to run. More like speed walking out of there, but I wanted to run away from my failure. I wanted to run away from my shame, and I wanted to run away from this darkness that had settled in. In our gospel lesson from Mark today, we encounter the disciples in a similar state of mind. They are afraid. They are in a panic. And they're stuck with a real bad case of the zoomies. Except for them, there was nowhere to run. Because you see, they were on a boat out at sea in the middle of a nor'easter. And it's clear by their reactions that they've forgotten. They've forgotten who it was that had sent them out there in the first place. They've forgotten that earlier in the chapter, Jesus had sent them out on an evangelizing mission with nothing but the clothes on their backs. And that they had made it through. They had made it through that experience not only unscathed, but full of miraculous stories of healing that they had been able to do through the power of Jesus Christ. And they've forgotten that immediately before getting on that boat, they had witnessed Jesus feeding a crowd of 5,000 people with just 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Not only that, they had collected 12 baskets of leftovers. And they had forgotten that they'd been there before, the same exact scenario, because 2 chapters earlier, they were facing a severe windstorm at sea. They woke Jesus up in a panic, and after Jesus had restored peace by calming the storm, he had asked them, "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" So I wonder what tone of voice he might have said to the disciples on this instance when he came upon them at sea. The version we read today says, "Be encouraged." The NRSV says, "Take heart. It is I. Do not be afraid." Perhaps there was a tone of exasperation. Perhaps a tone of dejection. Or a bit of disbelief. That surely, after all the disciples had witnessed, after all he had revealed to them, after all that they had accomplished by his authority, that surely they would be found at peace this time around. That surely he might have found them singing, "It is well with my soul." Because it can happen. It has been done before. We have from the cloud of witnesses who go before us accounts of an enduring faith, a steadfast faith even in the midst of our greatest fears, even as we face our worst nightmares, a faith that can summon peace in the midst of a storm at sea. The hymn, "It Is Well With My Soul," which was written in 1873, is a testament to such a faith. It was written by Horatio Stafford, a prominent lawyer in Chicago. He and Anna, his wife, and their four daughters were scheduled to vacation in England, joining a renowned evangelist by the name of D.L. Moody on a revival tour. But at the last minute, because of a real estate deal, he was forced to remain behind while his family went ahead without him. The ship carrying his family struck another vessel at sea, killing 226 people on board. He received a telegram from Anna 9 days later that read, "Saved alone, what shall I do?" The story goes that as he sailed to join his wife, the captain of the boat called him to his cabin to tell him that they were passing over the spot where his daughters had drowned. And it is in that moment, in the midst of a storm of grief, I can't begin to imagine that Horatio Stafford wrote this hymn, "It Is Well With My Soul." So what can we do? What can we, who like the disciples, that have hearts which were hardened, who have a fearful and forgetful faith, do in the face of adversity? Perhaps we get a hint of what to do in verse 46. It says, "After saying farewell to them, he," Jesus, "went up on the mountain to pray." It occurs to me that this is something Jesus would often do. Whether it was after performing a miracle, like in this instance, or before facing his greatest fear in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus was rooted in prayer. And because he was rooted in prayer, he knew exactly who he was, exactly whose he was. He knew that he was a beloved child of God, and no matter what, no matter what the circumstances, no matter what situation he faced, he was walking within the scope of God's authority. Sisters and brothers in Christ, if the witness of the faithful who have come before us is any indication, we will encounter storms along the way. In fact, if we are following Jesus Christ, he will be the one who sends us out into the storm. He tells us plainly, we must deny ourselves. We must deny the false security and comfort we grant ourselves, and we must dare to take up the cross that is waiting for each and every one of us. And if you're like me, and you find yourself fearful and forgetful on your journey of faith, take heart. Take heart because the hope of the gospel is delivered not only through the Horatio Staffords of the world who had an enduring and steadfast faith. It's also delivered by those who had a fearful and forgetful faith. Those whom had hardened hearts. Those who were scared and ran away. Those who doubted, those who didn't know what they were doing, people like Peter, people like Thomas, people like Paul, or even John Wesley, who had his own experience of panic and fear out at sea on his way to the Georgia colonies. Because it is God, as we heard from the book of Jeremiah, it is God who will write the law on our stony hearts. A Jewish rabbi, when asked why the law is written on our hearts, said, "It's so that when our stony hearts break by the grace of God, the law becomes written on hearts of flesh." And this law is written on our hearts from the greatest, those with enduring and steadfast faith, to the least of us, to those of us with a fearful and forgetful faith. So take heart, for it is Jesus Christ who sends us into the storm. Take heart, for it is Jesus Christ who is in the boat with us. Thanks be to God.